Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte, and in the studio today, we have a good friend of mine who I haven't actually had on the show. This is the first time, so this is really cool. Good friend of mine, Miss Frankie Marshall of the Dead Rabbit. As you know what? Not just the Dead. I mean, like, I feel like you have clones, like, all over the world.
I've been around a little bit. First of all, let me say that I'm really excited to be here because I have been begging you to be on the show for years now. So finally,
yeah, this is great.
In the seat.
Yeah, I'm super psyched. I got that mic hot right now.
It's nice.
I'm glad we finally made the time to do it. I know you work on Wednesdays. You're going to be going to work like immediately after this, so I'm really glad that we got the time to do it. And speaking of, you're going to be working at the Dead Rabbit tonight, which just celebrated its first anniversary, so congratulations on that.
Thank you. I just show up, really. I have nothing to do with that. No, it's great. It's been really exciting being there. Those guys are very forward-thinking, as you know, and it's a challenging job. I have to say, it's challenging, but it's really worth it.
Yeah, I mean, you have a pretty intense menu, and like the bar setup is crazy. I mean, it's intense for two bars day, put together.
Right? Yeah, no, I know it's amazing. I think we have close to 90 bottles on the bar. Those are just cheater bottles, and then the prep work that goes into it, all the syrups and the tinctures and the infusions and and right now we just pared down the menu. There used to be 82 on the old one. Now there's just 74.
Oh yeah, so that's crazy. Exactly, man. You really
big
stripped
drop.
Down. It's insane. I mean, it must be like autopilot for you.
You know what? It's really hard. That's my biggest weakness, I think, trying to memorize all those recipes. It's a challenge. And it's not like there are three ingredient recipes.
Right. Right.
It's a lot of them are like 7, 8, 9, 10.
How do you do it? I mean, like, it's like I've never had more than like 20 drinks on my cocktail menu at any given time. And it's a lot easier for me because like most of those drinks are ones that I came up with.
Right.
So it's like,
yeah.
So I'm sure it's difficult for my staff, the other bartenders to get used to. But like, I know that like typically they'll use like flashcards.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that to me, like, that's extremely cute.
It doesn't bother you?
No, I love it. I think it's great while they're learning. Like, we always have the spec sheets and in our bar Bible and everything. That's so it's, and luckily, you always have those laminated because it's trial and error.
Yeah.
You're going to spill stuff all over it. How is there any like association that you use, or do you just is it like a repetition?
Yeah, it's part of it. Yeah, definitely is that repetition. But I'll be honest, with so many drinks, they really order across the menu. So as yet with this new one, we haven't developed those regular, the biggest hits just yet.
Sure.
So, but yeah, we definitely have those laminates, and I have my own little book that I keep in my pocket. So I made sure to buy work pants that were large enough to actually, with pockets large enough to hold this book. So I refer to that a lot, and I'm not ashamed to, I keep it low, but it just has to happen. Especially at this point. I mean, the menu's only been, like you said, in effect since February 13th. So, it hasn't really been that long. So,
yeah. I mean, like, to me, it's like, I have a couple of Moleskins that I keep behind the bar.
Yeah.
But it's not just for like the cocktails on my menu. Like, there's so many classics that you can't remember every one of my, like, we're not all Nick Jarrett, we can't just like call out,
Thank God. But and the funny thing is too, we have our own specs for classics there as well. So I have to refer to those because, we like to keep it uniform. So, forget about the specs that I know about anything. So always referring back to our Bibles there. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Do you guys, I think you guys kind of keep it on the drier side as far as the classics go, right? Like,
generally, yeah. Yeah, I'd say Jack's palate is definitely runs on the drier side. In general. So, and a little higher on the alcohol content as well. It's, you know, although he kind of adjusted that for this menu now. So I think for the first menu, it was like, oh, let's go for it. Let's put, 3.5 ounces in everything.
Oh,
but,
man.
Yeah. So those are the good old days. But yeah, now, I mean, it's a lot more, sensible in a certain aspect. Yeah.
So let's go back to Frankie Marshall. Where did you get into this whole world, and where did you cut your teeth? Like, what brought you into it?
Oh dear, is it just sorted?
I love this side of the story people are on.
You know, I'll be honest. I've been bartending for years. I started, way back in the teens. I mean, I started as a server, that classic story. Mm-hmm. And then working around town in all kinds of, dive bars and hotel restaurants and whatnot. And then one day I just started reading about, kind of slowly what was happening, and always had a curiosity about it, And then one day I just decided I want to learn more about what's going on. I want to be challenged. And so I tried to start working in cocktail bars. I was on Craigslist, and I kept applying, and no one would ever call me. And then finally, one day I saw, an ad for Clover Club, literally on Craigslist. And I'd read about Julie somewhere. And then I thought, this is it. And it was just one of those, when your eyes pop out and it's like you zero in. It's like, all right, I have to get this job. Because it was in Brooklyn, too. It was close by where I live. And then, I wrote this cover letter that was really,
specific.
Exactly. Yeah. I talked about how I really believed in using different types of ice. Meanwhile, I'd never used any other type of ice other than the chip ice. But, I made it all up. And she called me, and then we had a great interview. And she said, well, I can't hire you as a bartender, but, you can... I said, well, I'll bar back or I'll serve. What would you prefer? I said, well, I think we'll put you on the floor. So, I started as a cocktail server there. And that was really my, my entree into the cocktail world.
And I remember when you started there, because I also live in that neighborhood.
That's right.
And I think going there, Clover Club's been open about as long as Prime Meats has. So
yep.
Like, we've always, So there's always been kind of a cool thing with, there's a synergy, I believe, rather than a competition in the neighborhood with places like Jake Walk.
Absolutely.
And Clover and Prime Meats. But I know that some of the bartenders who have worked at Prime Meats have gone to Jake Walk or Clover and vice versa. It's kind of like a nice little community.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
And hanging out with Brad Farron at Bar Great Harry, post shift. That happens.
It does.
Or pre-shift, really.
Probably pre, and sometimes during. We used to have a bar back at Clover. He'd go, he used to boat for shots, on his break and come back. We found this out after, of course. I absolutely remember, you'd come in a lot, you and your bro with Dylan, and, you guys came in one night on your birthday. I remember that. Birthdays. But,
I totally remember that.
Yeah, right. But yeah, you're always very supportive. For me, it was just I didn't know what I didn't know in those days. You know what I mean? And there was so much to learn. And on that opening staff, Giuseppe Gonzalez was the head bartender. Yeah. You said Brad was there. Nate, Mrs. Kishtipple, as I call her, Katie Stipe was just about there. And a few other people. And it was an amazing time, I learned a lot. Learned a great deal.
And then, especially with that kind of... I remember you going, I remember when I first met you working there, and then, from that time, and then the first time that you got behind the bar there, I was you were telling me, dude, I'm starting to bartender.
Right.
I was right. Because, even though, Katie and, wasn't Lynette working there first?
No.
She was just, I've seen her there.
Right. She was, she worked at Flatiron.
Oh, that's what,
and then, she started with Juliet Flatiron as a cocktail server, and then moved on, of course.
And the cool thing about it is and one of the reasons I like Julie so much is that she's really embraced bringing the female side to the bar, which has been so male dominant forever.
Yeah.
And kind of proving people like Ivy, who works for as well, starting to be speed rack and just kicking ass on that front. And now it's not even a thing. It's it's the playing field is leveled, if not more in favor. I'd like to go to a bar where the whole bar is females.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, and I've always hated that we had to have this discussion about, female bartenders and male bartenders are hearing someone's like the best female bartender out there, you know, when there's, it's just unfair, you know, because it's true. We had to try prove ourselves so much more just to be kind of considered kind of medium high. Whereas there's all these gents out there who were okay, but they were, it was okay for them to be just okay. You know what I mean? Whereas we had to be really good. And still that there's a little bit of that too. You always want to kind of prove to not just to the male counterparts, but to everyone around you that you, you know, you're serious, especially in certain environments, you know. But yeah, I appreciate that too. But I don't agree with this whole hire a woman just because she's a woman thing. Like, I really believe that people just, whoever you are, you need to just prove yourself in whatever you're doing.
Well, and that's another thing. Going back to what I said at the top of the show about how you must have clones all over the world, because I've seen you, like, you're one of the people that I see the most. And, like, this is great. I see you at so many cocktail events and like competition stuff, and you want to be like, you just kicking ass, and like, that's the cool thing about the competitions. It's really like, all right, check this out. It's not just about being a chick behind a bar. It's like, I can actually do this better than you, you bunch of dicks.
Sometimes. Well, it's true. I mean, first of all, the cocktail, I love traveling, but I also love seeing what's, you know, going on, how people are doing things in different places and why they're doing things the way they are. You know, that's, for me, is very important. And I've learned, again, a lot doing that, you know. And I went over to London in 2011 and did that stage at Colebrook Row. Yeah. It was only for a week, but it made a huge impact on me, you know. I love that festival circuit. You know, I've done it a couple of times now, so now I'm kind of, you know, moving. I'd like to go to different festivals now. I still haven't been to the Berlin Bar Convent. I'd love to check that one out, and, you know, London Cocktail Week maybe. But, I mean, the ones in the U.S. are really important. And so, yeah, for me, it's just great to meet people and see what's happening and talk to them. And
I think, I mean, it must have been crazy going to 69 Colebrook Row. Because you got the whole lab upstairs.
Yeah, it was. Again, it's one of those things where I just went in there kind of wide eyed, and you know, luckily I got to spend 2 days with that, actually with Tony C. He was in the lab for 2 days, and then his head bartender Stu Bale at the time was the one who took me under his wing. But it was just intensive because I'd never worked in that environment, which is why I wanted to be there. But at the same time, you know, they would say things like, put the hoochie maku in the blotty blah, and we're like, what's the blotty blah? I don't know what that is, you know. And I just have to kind of just do it, you know. It was almost like a high end, like kitchen, you know, high end kitchen kind of thing, where it's just everything, all kinds of ingredients that they get sourced from all over the world, just the best products. And now they've actually moved to, you know, I think it's, if I'm get this correctly, it's a studio where part of the wall was recorded in London. So it's so they're no longer above the of the bar. So
I heard something about that.
Yeah. So so they have a really, like, a full time person who works there, just doing experiments and whatnot. But at the time, it was literally right above. You know, it was a staff room, office, lockers, all that stuff.
Yeah. It's insane. Yeah. Like, what kind of things did you take away from, like, being around the lab? I mean, like, I feel like you and I kind of focus on almost like modern classic. Mm-hmm. You know, like we're pretty steeped in, like, the classic, like, just really solid cocktails, but then using like one or two slightly oddball ingredients to just like elevate the impression of that drink,
right?
You know,
yeah.
But as far as like techniques, as far as like those lab techniques, like I don't have a centrifuge or a rotovap or any of that stuff. Yeah. But I, you know, sometimes you can pull inspiration from some of them. Did you take anything from any of those techniques?
Yeah, the end result was interesting there, because when you looked at that menu that they had, maybe there's 10 drinks. And when you saw the drink in front of you, if you didn't know anything about Tony C or Colebrook Row, you'd think, well, what's the big deal with this? But, you know, when you saw what actually went into the making of that drink, or what, you know, they had a drink called, a dry martini, which actually had, no, let me not use that as an example. They had a Bloody Mary, you know, which had like a black pepper essence. Like, they distilled down their horseradish, and they distilled down the vodka. So everything just became like one thing that they were pouring basically out of a bottle, kind of, you know. And this was all, kind of done up above. But it didn't seem, and it tasted incredible, but, you know, you would not have necessarily thought about, like, what's going into this drink. So they just made, everything was happened upstairs, and then what came downstairs was an easy preparation for bartenders and for guests to understand, you know. And so that, I think, was a key that I realized. It doesn't have to be this big production in front of people, you know, as long as the end result is incredible.
Sure.
And just his flavor combinations that he wouldn't have thought of, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the time, I guess this was 2011. So, and these are things that he'd had in the works for a couple of years before that, you know. So he was doing like poppy seeds and sweet vermouth and sesame seeds. He was doing a lot of seeds and vermouth at that time, you know, and things with mushrooms, like trying to get like the essence of the forest kind of thing.
Yeah.
So things I hadn't really...
Some real hippie shit.
Yeah,
he's been hanging out with Nick Stranger
right?
too long.
Who's another, you know, genius. So yeah, just different ways of thinking of combinations, you know, and again, it doesn't, at the end of the day, it doesn't have to be a big production. And the way that their team worked, they all worked as a team, which, you know, I mean, if a drink was sitting there and the cocktail server wasn't available, the bartender would just take the drink out. And you know very well, that doesn't tend to happen in New York a lot. The bartender's like, whoop, you know.
So I'm stuck back here.
Exactly.
You can't see it, but there's a chain around my ankle. Yeah.
So, you know, and they worked out of one well. Which is, again, another thing. You know, people here are very, like, you know, stay away from it, very territorial. So right. It was just very much a team effort just to get the drinks out and to, like, give a really great guest experience.
That's cool.
Everyone was humble as well.
That's great.
Yeah, like, so.
Yeah, that's something we don't get too much these days either.
Absolutely. You know, so.
But, we're about halfway through the show. Let's take a quick break.
Okay.
And then when we get back, we'll continue talking with Miss Frankie Marshall.
Yes, sir.
Back in a moment.
Just circles on the map. Just circles on the map. Yeah, cherry lemon, aren't you black? Cherry, aren't you black? But up for a boy, I'm feeling good.
Today's music is Wilderness Tips by Cookies on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy, and we have Miss Frankie Marshall in the studio. And we were just talking about how she's the most globe-trotting bartender I know. We were just, before the break, we were talking about your time spent at 69 Colebrook Row in London, and talking about the flavor profiles and the combinations. Mm-hmm. I think that's like one of the things that really got me into this style of bartending in the first place was just thinking about different flavor profiles and kind of obscure ingredients and not necessarily throwing everything in the kitchen sink into that cocktail and achieving a really nice unified flavor from, you know, not a thousand, you know, not just tons of ingredients.
Right.
I mean, like the example I commonly use is the QB cooler versus the Mai Tai.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Mai Tai was a variation of the QB cooler, you know, but it took it down from 9 ingredients to 5 ingredients. And, you know, and no one talks about the QB cooler.
Right.
They talk about the Mai Tai.
Yeah. Well, but I think that that's really important. And that's something that's hard for us to learn, especially when we first start out. If you work in, say, a restaurant or you have access to a kitchen where you have all these ingredients, it's very hard to kind of pull everything down to a more of a basic form, but just a form that's usable, you know, recipes that are actually feasible for service, but still getting a great flavor, something that's really different, you know? I agree. It's really easy to want to throw 10 ingredients in there and think that that's amazing.
Yeah.
You know?
And plus, I mean, like, when you got to think about the way that the drink warms up, you know, how it matures, like, you know, that first sip is going to taste a lot different than the middle, you know, midway through, and then the last sip.
Yeah.
Also, it's like, you know, is this a drink that you could have a second one of?
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the big questions I always ask myself when I'm developing cocktails, mm-hmm, you know, because mm-hmm. I want, you know, there's a selfishness when you're on a menu with a bunch of other bartenders,
yeah,
and you all have drinks on there, but you want yours to like continually get ordered, you know?
Of course. Yeah.
It's like, it's a good kind of selfishness though. You know, it's like, it's a challenge. It's a challenge and reward system for yourself.
Yeah.
You know? Lets you know that you did a good job on creating something.
Right. And quite frankly, what in my experience, it's often the simpler drinks that do get ordered a lot more, you know, because a lot of times people are like, you know, the whole, is it good? You know, I don't understand. I don't know if that's going to work. Again, depending on where you're working, right?
Yeah.
But that's one thing we really have to keep, you know, be conscious of, you know. And I noticed, again, I was going to say further the Colebrook thing, I spent some time hanging out in bars in London, you know, just seeing how they were working over there. And that was really, really cool as well. Because they were doing some interesting stuff, you know, really, you know, going to places like, I went to like Kalua Kalei or... Mm-hmm. What's the other one? The Whistling... It was called Pearl, actually. They went on to the Whistling Stop after that. And bars like that, where they were doing some really cool stuff. But again, not necessarily 10-ingredient drinks, but just really well-chosen ingredients with really interesting presentations that we actually don't... We can't get into as much over here because we're all about bottom lines, you know, and money and how much does the glassware cost. And,
yeah, absolutely. You know, it's huge. It's huge. And it... And also, we deal with a lot of so much breakage and theft.
Yeah.
Once you start putting anything in a cool glass,
yeah.
You start worrying about breakage, start worrying about theft. I have these brass grog mugs, and I found like a ton of them, and I got a really good deal on them at an antique store. And they were like new old stock. They were still in boxes wrapped in like paper from like the 1950s or 60s, and I got like 40 of them. And they're silver lined too.
Or stainless.
Yeah. They're not silver lined. That'd be crazy.
You never know.
Maybe.
It's prime meats,
maybe
after all.
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, come on. We're super high class. So I got them, and like they like tarnish really well. They start looking really cool and like antiqued. And you know, the good thing, one of those things that we worry about, I don't have to worry about. You know, I don't have to worry about breakage with those because they're metal.
But how many do you have left?
Yeah, I know. I have like half of what I originally had left.
Yeah.
And you know, just thing like, you know, Cocktail Kingdom repopping the Moscow Mule mugs, and doing like Leopold, the really nice thin stemware.
Yeah.
Tiki mugs. People like to steal shit from bars.
Anything. You know, it's incredible. I mean,
menus. Death and Company had for a long time. They had a surcharge on your bill that would just show up when they went back to the table and the menu was missing.
Yeah,
it was like $75.
Yeah, that actually happens at Dead Rabbit a lot. I'm pretty vigilant about that, but it's very hard, you know, because people always say, you know, can we just hold on to this? Of course. And I had this woman actually the other day who got up to we don't allow dancing upstairs, but you know, it was late night. She got up. And we turned around, and she actually had the menu tucked in the back of her pants.
Oh, my
and
God.
And we all saw. And then, so, you know, a conversation had to ensue.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah.
I don't expect you to tell me how the conversation went, but we'll talk about that after the show.
But, you know, they're expensive at the end of the day, you know.
Well, especially your menu at Death & Company. It's crazy. It's
Dead Rabbit, please, Dead Rabbit.
Or, sorry, Dead Rabbit, sorry. I was thinking,
they're both expensive.
They are. To me, it's a really cool thing in general about a lot of bars nowadays. Like, I look at my, like, you know, like Xeroxed menu, and then like I put it next to other people's menu. I put it next to the Dead Rabbit menu, and I'm just like, oh my God.
Well, you know, I mean, again, different styles, it depends, you know, different needs. It's those guys wanted to go for that. They wanted that book.
Yeah.
They wanted the, you know, the graphic novel theme for this one. And
it's a legacy piece, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And, you know, it's also, there's like, what I have to deal with my menus, every time I go into the bar and like I'm organizing all my menus, like I've got 500 different menus for like different foods and drinks and wine lists and all stuff. And like they are printed on, you know, like kind of a heavier cardstock. But, you know, my bar is kind of shallow. There's cheater bottles all over it. People get rowdy at my bar. And so like they just spill all over it. And then I end up throwing most of them away anyway.
Yeah.
So
I know. It's classic. That's a hard thing to solve, the whole menu issue. You know,
but I think what's really cool about yours is like that you do run that menu for a year.
Yeah.
So you know what, putting a little bit more money into it, it's not a bad idea at all. Especially because, I mean, it's the coolest looking menu.
It looks pretty good. It looks pretty good, and I'm actually really excited because I actually have you know, about five drinks of that new menu too. So I was like,
yeah,
phew, you know, thank God I got in there.
Yeah.
Because the first menu was all Jack's, which is understandable since he started developing this years ago. But yeah, there are some cool looking menus out there. I was in Prague last November, and there's a place called Bugsy's Bar. And they have a really nice... Do you know Bugsy's?
No.
It's one of the first cocktail bars in Prague. Bugsy's and Treaders. And their menu is really cool. It's a black book, and it has some, you know, graphic novel elements to it as well. And that one looks pretty good. So
cool.
Yeah.
I think like, there's a... I just recently went to Tucker Alley,
yeah.
Del Pedro's place.
Yeah.
And I really like his, because it's actually kind of punk rock. Mm-hmm. It's in a binder... Just like a regular binder that he like stamped with his the Tucker Alley logo,
yeah,
which I think looks completely fine
right,
on the outside. But then you open it up, and it's almost like some pages look like collage and like Xerox, like handwritten,
right?
You know, and it's there's like some old anecdotes and stories about the Dill Pickle Club.
Yes, and, yeah, you know, I've seen that. Yeah,
and it's a cool book, and there's some certain like quotes, and then there like one of my favorite things about it. And this, again, going back to, like, you know, very inventive, like, menu design, he has some blank comment pages in the back of the book. And it says, basically, it's like, you know what, man? We're not going to check Yelp. We don't care.
Yeah.
So anything you say bad about us, if you're trying to get under our skin,
right.
It's like, it's going to go lost there. So you know what? Just write it in this book.
That's smart.
Yeah. It's amazing. So, yeah. And all these people, they don't really, there's never anything like necessarily bad or like, I think one time I one of the pages I saw, because then I started picking up every menu and
just
reading
to see
it,
what was in there. Yeah.
But, one of them was like, the bathroom's out of toilet paper.
Right.
I think that's about as bad as it got as far as comments.
Right. Right.
And then, you know, someone drew a dick on something, you know, but
a dick.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Actually, I'm going to try that now. I'm just going to go up to people and say, you know what? We're not going to be reading Yelp. So if you have any problems, just talk to me. You know, can we work through this?
Let's work this out.
Yeah. You don't need to go online.
And if we can't, you know what? I don't want you back.
Right.
I've had to go there. But okay. Speaking of, I mean, like, do you ever read Yelp reviews of the places you worked at, you know, and do work at?
Yeah, I do. I do on occasion. Yeah. I do. Is that wrong?
I don't know. It's highly debatable.
Yeah.
I don't like, I know some people do and some people are strongly against it.
Yeah.
I don't really so much. I mean, cause I know I'm going to hear about it in the manager meeting every week.
Yeah.
So I'll just let them filter through all that. I don't really have time for it.
But it is a frustrating experience because a lot of people, you know, what people get like, you know, they can be very unreasonable and just,
of course.
You know, they just don't understand certain things. Like I remember when Clover first opened and I was reading, you know, Yelp reviews about that. Someone said, oh, there's a doorman at the door and it's really expensive for Brooklyn, you know, go back to Manhattan kind of thing. Meanwhile, you know, it's now 5 years later and the cocktails are still maybe $13 now or something. I mean, they started at 11 and 12. That's not outrageous, you know, for a cocktail. And there was no door. I mean, there was a guy checking IDs, but that's pretty
standard. It's not like there was a door policy.
Exactly. You know, but again, people didn't even want to investigate that. They were just automatically, you know, dismissing things. So, it can be really frustrating. But I'll admit, sometimes when someone, you know, mentions your name, though, for a good thing, then you're like,
personally,
but that doesn't happen too often.
yeah it's usually the other way around.
Exactly.
That asshole.
And I'm pretty identifiable at the places I work, so you know, it's not hard to point a finger.
I think we both are.
Well, that's true.
But I mean, like, whatever, I don't care anymore about that stuff. I'm sure if I had a Yelp review for this radio show, it'd be all over the place too.
Well, actually, maybe I'll start one.
Oh my god, can you?
I've been meaning to, you know, start a Yelp account because I have a lot of bad experiences when I go out, actually. But I never really talk Yelp. I never Yelp about them. But
I think I have given one bad Yelp review.
Yeah.
And like 20 good ones, but that was like probably more than 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And then I was just like, well, you know, my version of Yelp reviewing is just, I just don't go to that place again if it sucked.
Right, you know, right.
I don't want to, like, get someone fired.
Yeah.
You know, because they had an off night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's usually what it is. Unless somebody's just like, if somebody's still working at a place and they're that big of an asshole, then they must be friends with the owner.
Right, yeah.
Or like,
probably the owner.
Probably maybe. The owner.
Yeah.
But yeah, typically if you're that big of a dick,
yeah,
you're not there the next time, like, you know, somebody comes by.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Yeah. It's a funny thing. It's a funny thing. But
so do you, like, speaking of trips, do you have anything coming up?
Well, funny you should ask, because I do actually. Well, I was just in Oaxaca in January doing some mezcal research, very serious business.
Research.
But yeah, I'm actually going to Cognac this Saturday in a couple of days. Yeah, so I'm doing this thing called the Cognac Educator Program. Mm-hmm. So it's run by the Cognac Bureau. They invite like 16 people a year to do it, two from the U.S. So it's. It's actually a course. It's not for fun. I have to go there and go to distilleries and learn things and then do a big presentation. And if I pass, I come back and I'll be a certified cognac educator.
Nice.
So I'm looking forward to that. But it's a little daunting at the same time. You know, it's cognac, there's a lot of rules, lots to retain. But And then Peru after that.
Nice.
I'm going, on a little distillery tour with a brand. So I'm looking forward to checking that out. Yeah,
you got to sneak me in your suitcase one of these days.
Well, you know, I mean, that's the one. That's the problem with being a in your position. When you're in the lofty positions, you know, it's hard for you to get it away. You know what I mean? You got to keep it around the store.
I don't think you know my position.
But seriously, that's sometimes what's good about just.
But maybe I'll see you at Tales of the Cocktail or Portland Cocktail Week.
Well, like
when I can turn it into a work thing.
Well,
somebody flies me out.
I've seen it in the last year. I saw you at Portland last year, didn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Of course
we did. I was working.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you did your great...
Just like research.
That's right. The Cripple Creek, which was great.
It was fun and weird.
Well, yeah, you should. You got to bring that back to Tales this year.
We'll see. Might happen.
Yeah.
It's probably going to happen.
Yeah, why shouldn't it?
I don't know. I can't see any reason why not.
Well, neither can I, damn it. But yeah, so definitely Tales and, so we'll see. But go international. Maybe get something going. Let's go international. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Forget about these American people.
Let's go to Scotland soon. We'll talk about that after the show.
Yeah.
All right. Frankie, it's been so awesome having you on the show today, and I can't wait to have you back.
Oh, listen, Mr. Bolte, honestly, thank you very much. I've enjoyed my time thoroughly, even though it's taken, I'm going to say, 10 years. But still, I'm not bitter.
Oh, come on.
No, I'm kidding. I loved it. Love it. Thank you so much. It was an honor to be here.
My pleasure. All right, that's it for the Speakeasy this week. Tune in next week for more boozy business.
Bye.
Cheers.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.